This is Tony welcoming back Troy Anderson to A Minute to Midnight. We had Troy on a few weeks ago discussing the Babylon Code, and it's great to have you back again today, Troy.
It's great to be back on the program. Thank you for inviting me back.
I hear you've made a big move from Florida to California.
Yeah, we just moved from Florida to California. I resigned as editor of Charisma, and the Babylon Code became America's number one best-selling prophecy book. So Paul McGuire and I are going to make the film now. And then I also have an offer to become an editor of a new End Times team launching this summer. And several other things are going on. So it's just sort of a confluence of different opportunities that arose, and we decided that this was the best move. In fact, when we moved to Florida in late 2014, I told my wife that I thought we'd probably only be there for about a year, and then the Lord would open the door for the film project to go forward, and that's what's happening now. So we're very excited about this.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. Sounds like you've got some really good plans for the future with your job and with the Babylon Code, with the film. It's exciting, really.
Yeah, very exciting. The idea for the Code, of course, originated about 6-7 years ago when Paul McGuire and I first met at a prophecy conference. And it wasn't too long after that he suggested we write a book about this prophetic mystery in the Bible involving Babylon. And then he also mentioned at the time that this would be a great film to put together. And he's made a couple of films past, and we've been in touch with various producers over the last few years, and now it's just sort of coalesced together. Now the book's become a bestseller, and we believe this is a great way to get this message out to a much wider audience. Of course, a certain number of people will read a book, but millions of people can watch a film, and so I felt deeply compelled over the last several years to try to get this message out. The book features interviews with more than 100 different faith leaders and experts in politics and science and economics and theology, everybody from Billy Graham to Dr. Tim LaHaye to Joel Rosenberg and Rabbi Jonathan Kahn to the secular experts like Noam Chomsky and professors at Princeton and Oxford. And I just thought it was important to get this out to the world. And now this opportunity arose. So we're following the Lord's calling here.
Great. So do you see the film following along the lines of the book, or is it deviating from the theme of the book? What's the plan there?
Yeah, the I've written a film proposal and some one sheets, and the film it'll open up with a segment involving my ancestor Friedrich von Schiller. He was a famous German poet and playwright. He wrote the poem "Ode to Joy" that Beethoven set to music in the Ninth Symphony, and he wrote the play "Don Carlos," which George Lucas cited as an inspiration for Star Wars. And he also wrote Marie Stuart and the Robbers and some other plays. And I can tell you more about the story, but essentially the idea is we're picking up where he left off a couple centuries ago. Many of his friends at the time were members of the Bavarian Illuminati, and he became wise to their plans towards the end of his life and was actually writing a play to expose the plans to overthrow the governments of Europe and abolish Christianity. And then he died mysteriously. And when I was little, my grandmother told me about this and encouraged me to follow in his footsteps, and then later on I learned about this mystery surrounding his death, and then began this investigation into whether end times events are coming together during this in our time.
That sounds very interesting and intriguing, and I'm actually interested to know what your thoughts are regarding America and the mystery Babylon and where you think it fits in, particularly in the run-up to elections. Where do you think this may all, how do you think it may all be playing out in the end time scenario?
Yeah, this is an interesting part of the book. So the book comes this, this prophetic mystery, this great biblical riddle involving Babylon in the Bible, with an investigation, a journalistic investigation into whether we are in the run-up to the end-time events predicted in Scripture. For those who didn't listen to the last program, the Babylon Code involves a prophetic mystery. Babylon, you first read about Babylon in Genesis, with the story of the Tower of Babel and Nimrod. And Nimrod is considered an archetype of the Antichrist. And then Babylon plays a central role in the books of the prophets. You know, you probably read about, you know, Babylon throughout different parts of the Bible, and Daniel and Ezekiel and Isaiah and Jeremiah. And it's you know, the King Nebuchadnezzar, you probably heard that story. And, you know, the exile of the Jewish people to Babylon for 70 years. And then Babylon reappears in Revelation, where John talks about mystery Babylon and Babylon the Great. And there's been a lot of controversy over the centuries about what is mystery Babylon and Babylon the Great. And it's destroyed. What this thing is, it's completely destroyed by fire in 1 hour, Revelation tells us, near the end of the age. And so this prophetically, you know, helps explain what's happening today. You know, we see the rise of the spirit of Babylon, this Babylonian system arising all around us today. And so we combine this prophetic mystery with journalistic investigation. I'm a Pulitzer Prize nominated investigative journalist, and my co-author Paul McGuire is a prophecy expert. He spent decades studying the, you know, different secret societies, the Bilderberg Group and the Skull and Bones and Illuminati and Bohemian Grove. And Bible prophecy. And so we combined this all together to look at, you know, are we in the run-up to these events that the prophets predicted thousands of years ago?
So in light of this, where do you think America fits? The traditional, at least in the last 20 or 30 years, I guess, prophecy experts or supposed experts tend to have said that America disappears, stops being a superpower. It's not mentioned in the Bible, so that most of them have said, you know, so therefore it must disappear from significance, must at least stop being a superpower or something along those lines. But then there's been, in more recent times, some people are going, now hold on a second, maybe America does actually fit in the Bible. Maybe it's mystery Babylon. America does in many ways seem to fit the bill that we see for mystery Babylon in Revelation.
Yeah, you're correct that, you know, Bible scholars have often pondered, you know, why isn't the United States, you know, mentioned in the Bible? Of course, you know, when the Bible was written, you know, United States didn't exist. And so the question is turned to, well, is there some kind of, you know, allusion or symbolic reference to United States? You know, of course, it's the most, you know, powerful, wealthy nation in the history of the world. And it has enormous power and influence today, even though it's diminished from what it was here in recent decades, but still very, very powerful, influential country. And so the question is, you know, why isn't the U.S. in the Bible? And so there's a growing number of people who believe that the United States is mentioned in the Bible, that it possibly is this, you know, mystery Babylon or Babylonian system. Of course, you know, Babylon was a place of wealth and power and influence, military might, you know, astronomy and all kinds of different sciences were developed in ancient Babylon. And it was, you know, it was the great kingdom that the prophet Daniel located in when he made the predictions in the book of Daniel about the different great empires that would, you know, preside over the world, you know, until the end of the age. And so we don't come out and say we believe that that, you know, mystery Babylon is the United States, but we believe that the United States is probably going to play a central role in this end time system. You know, it could, you know, maybe Washington, D.C. or New York could be one of the capitals of this emerging system in the end times.
Because it may not necessarily be called the United States of America, of course, by that stage.
Because there's, you know, the book delves into this, but there's a growing push by, you know, globalists throughout the world to create a global government. You know, they've essentially created 10 different regional governments. You've heard of the European Union. That's sort of the model for the global system that we see arising around us now. And you may have heard of the North American Union. Well, there's actually, you know, 10 of these set up around the world. And the Bible talks about the Antichrist presiding over 10 kingdoms. And So we believe that this system is being put into place. You know, you might have heard of the term global governance. You know, here recently at the United Nations, they had a sustainable development summit where the nations of the world came together and voted on plans to, it's called the, you know, transforming the world by 2030. And it was a global citizen spell. So they're, you know, attracting many celebrities and they're trying to get us to think as global citizens. And there's definitely this conflict going on in the world now between those who believe that, you know, we could eliminate war, we could, you know, have peace and prosperity if we could, you know, bring the world together into some kind of, you know, international system beyond what we have right now. And then there are those who believe that, you know, we need to keep the nation state, we need to keep our sovereignty, and that, you know, this serves as a check and balance to, you know, prevent some kind of authoritarian government or, you know, tyrant or dictator from arising, which the Bible predicts, you know, will eventually happen. So that's sort of the conflict that's going on behind the scenes. You don't hear a lot about this in the mainstream media, but, you know, if you sort of read between the lines, it's apparent that this is all coming together now.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the Agenda 2030, because I was actually just going to ask you about that. That was my kind of next thought. Do you think then the whole climate change, that they're using this as a catalyst to foist more controls on people and for this to become sort of like a blueprint, an excuse that they can use to bring us towards global government, you know, global climate rules and ultimately global government?
Yeah, so the recent Paris climate change summit is one in a series of different things that have been happening in recent years, you know, so sort of incremental steps that the globalists are taking to try to put this system into place. You know, there's been all kinds of changes in international laws, you know, different international bodies set up. There's been trade treaties been passed between, you know, different countries. And now this recent climate change summit, you know, the nations of the world agreed to, you know, take steps to address climate change. Now, on the surface, that sounds like a very good thing. Of course, we want to reduce, you know, global warming if that in fact is happening, and address, you know, and pollution and that kind of things. But, you know, there's many people who believe, and I tend to believe this too, that this is sort of a ruse to sort of, you know, help. One more step along the way to put the system into place, this global system. And once you get, you know, the nations of the world focused on this is the, you know, one of the most important things we've got to do, and we're facing, you know, climatic disaster if we don't do this. The other big crisis that will probably be used at some point is, and, you know, we see steps towards this now, is the danger of nuclear war. And, you know, of course, America has been reducing its nuclear arsenals. And that would be part of the argument, too, is that, you know, we could, you know, reduce the likelihood of nuclear war by bringing the world together.
Do you have any thoughts on chemtrailing and the spraying of heavy metals and chemicals in the atmosphere? It would seem to me that could at least be partly responsible for what we see as supposed climate change.
I didn't get a chance to delve into that in the book, but I flew out to Missouri here a few months ago, Paul and I did, to do an interview on Skywatch TV. And, I mean, we're out in the middle of nowhere, and we look up in the sky at, you know, Dr. Tom Horn's ranch, and there's like, you know, there's like 30 or 40 chemtrails up in the sky. And it seems like wherever you go nowadays, you see these things. And, you know, presumably they're doing this to help reduce global warming. And, you know, exactly what are they spraying? What kind of this may have on our health? And like you're suggesting, are they actually, you know, is this whatever chemical they're spreading into the atmosphere, is this actually helping increase the temperature and contributing to global warming? So, you know, it's a very interesting thing that's going on.
Then there are people, including many scientists even, that are saying, well, they don't believe that the world is going through man-made climate change, that the Earth has always gone through cycles. For instance, in the Middle Ages, there was a particularly warm period, and then there was a mini ice age. And so they're saying, or arguing, that this is all a natural process. But it's getting a bit scary in places where they're even talking about prosecuting climate change deniers, and that to me sounds like totalitarian state material. where you've got to toe the official line or else.
Well, what country are they talking about doing that in?
Well, I actually saw a headline this morning where U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch told a Senate Judiciary Committee that they could look at pursuing the possibility of civil action against climate change deniers. So, and I don't think it's only America this is happening either.
Well, yeah, I mean, that'd be a massive violation of freedom of speech, you know. So that's another reason why, you know, it's important that people sort of wake up to as to what's happening, because, you know, the press and the freedom of speech is, you know, things are ensconced in our Constitution, and it's important to get the message out there to wake people up so that, you know, at least people are aware of what's going on. And, you know, there's a lot of shocking things unfolding worldwide.
And what about within the church? It seems to me that the church is by and large asleep. Is there anything being done to wake pastors up and congregations up to let them know what's actually really happening in the world so that they can do something about it, or are they just going to keep their heads buried in the sand?
Well, our publisher just sent out a letter to 13,000 pastors nationwide, encouraging them to read the Bible and invite us to speak at their church. We believe it's very important to get this message out. But most churches are not telling their congregations about what's happening. They're not connecting the dots regarding, you know, what the Bible tells us about what's going to happen in the end times and what we see unfolding now. And that's another reason why I felt it was very important to write this book and to make this film and get this message out there is you know, much of the church, you know, many Christians are just asleep at the wheel as end time events are unfolding. And in the past, you know, ministers would sort of lead the charge. They would, you know, they would speak out about things of this kind of magnitude. We saw this throughout history. But for some reason now, they're strangely silent. And in fact, we had an End Times issue on Charisma Magazine in September. And I had a story called The End Is Really Near, and a story about the Babylon Code. And then I asked Dr. Tim LaHaye, who wrote the Left Behind series, to contribute an article. And that's the very topic he wrote about in that September issue last year, was the silence in the pulpits. And he encouraged ministers to, you know, to teach their congregations about Bible prophecy and study ups and find out what's going on and get the word out. The good news is that, you know, while the church and the media is largely silent about what's happening, my sense is that the public is really waking up to what's going on, at least a pretty good size of the public.
So has there been any response from the 13,000 pastors that the email was sent out to?
We haven't got anything back yet, but they just sent it out last week. I imagine we'll get some responses coming here pretty soon. The other thing I was going to say was that, the Barna Group did a poll a few years ago and found that 4 in 10 Americans and 77% of evangelical Christians believe we're now living in the biblical end times. And then Joel Rosenberg, he's a New York Times bestselling author, he did a similar poll about a year and a half ago and found about the same results. So there is a growing awareness that we're probably, you know, somewhere in the run-up, in the, you know, the ballpark of this stuff, you know, coming together. And so it's sort of this strange dichotomy where you've got, you know, much of the public, especially Christians, aware that this is probably what's happening, and yet the church and the media is, you know, very, very silent about this. So, you know, if you're a minister or a pastor, listening to this, I would urge you to find out more about this and, try to get the word out, because this could be the final act in the big play.
And it is really important, I believe, that the pulpit and pastors and leaders do speak about this stuff, because if they're not telling the sheep about what's going on, then the sheep will stay asleep, because generally Christians, I think, look to their leaders and the pastors and things to give them some guidance. And if there's none coming from the pulpit and everything seems to be hunky-dory and going along fine, then people are going to think everything is going along fine, because they're looking generally to the leaders for some indication of what's going on. But if everyone's asleep, particularly in pastoral care, the ones that are supposedly guiding the sheep, if they're asleep, then what's happening to the rest of them? What's going to happen to the flock?
I would encourage, any ministers or pastors that listen to this, get a copy of the Babylon Code or another, end times book. We spent 5 years working on this, and the idea was to, really investigate and put together the best evidence available. Are we really in the run up to the end time events predicted in Scripture? So we cite almost all the citations are from either academic documents, government reports, mainstream media sources, or interviews with, highly sources, people like Billy Graham and, Pastor Greg Laurie, Dr. Tim LaHaye, Pastor Mark Hitchcock, who's considered a Bible scholar on this topic, Joel Rosenberg, Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. There's just dozens of different prophecy experts, Bible prophecy experts, Hal Lindsey. And then we also combine that with interviews of all kinds of secular experts. Noam Chomsky is a very well-known MIT professor who's retired. Professor Martin Guilens at Princeton, and professors at Oxford and different places. And, on the secular side, they're concerned about whether the world's in the run-up to the end of civilization. They're not, so much concerned about, Bible prophecy, but they believe that, we are facing, real and imminent threats to society. In fact, Oxford and MIT and I think it was Princeton have actually created institutes to study the possible end of civilization. And Oxford released a report listing the top 10 threats, and it ranged from, things you'd think of like nuclear war to, climate change. But the most surprising one is they listed a global totalitarian government or a world dictatorship as one of the top 10 threats facing humanity. And so that's sort of what the book delves into is, is this, are there globalist and powerful forces behind the scenes, working to put together the system, and the evidence suggests that that's true, that is happening. And we've had overwhelming positive response to the book. Nobody's, questioned any of the facts or premise of the book. And people have said things like, you'll be shocked by what you learned in this book. It's an eye-opener. It's mind-blowing. So we've got a lot of encouragement to get this message out. Many people believe that this book and this film could, really help wake up the church and wake up the world. And that's what we believe the Lord has called us to do.
And it's a very well-written book. Having read it myself, it's a great resource, and I certainly would recommend that people read it. And especially pastors and leaders and those in authority and those with a platform that can get people to hear this message, they are the ones that need to read it the most and to spread the word, because the most people, including in the church, really are not aware of what's going on. They're not aware that six major corporations control all the media, that the governmental systems are largely controlled by secret societies, and underneath those secret societies is a Luciferian elite. And so it is very important, I believe, that the Babylon Code gets out there to as many people as possible to wake them up, wake up the sleeping church and the world in general.
I agree with you, and it's very important to get this message out. And the book of Revelation does talk about mystery Babylon and the fate of Babylon. And for many years, Bible scholars thought that this portion of Revelation 17 and 18 that talks about Babylon being destroyed by fire in 1 hour, if this is referring to America, many believe this is like some kind of nuclear attack. But they thought that this is most likely at the end of the 7-year tribulation period. Recently, I've been speaking to Doug Woodward, who's the author of a new book. He's making the case that the book Revelation isn't completely chronological. It sort of skips around, and there's a good possibility, he argues, that this attack occurs before the tribulation. So, his premise is that America is destroyed in some kind of surprise nuclear attack before the tribulation even begins. And, you know, I just read his book and another one by Benjamin Baruch, who's a Jewish guy and author. In fact, he claims to be a descendant of Baruch, the scribe of the prophet Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. And he's a very interesting guy. And he makes a similar argument in another book on this topic, which cites a lot of research. So if that's the case, if that's indeed what the Bible predicts, that, you know, who knows, we may not have all that much time here. So it's important to get this word out and let people know that there are different interpretations about this. Revelation talks about, just so in case you haven't heard this before, Revelation 17:18 talks about Babylon being destroyed by fire 1 hour. It says the merchants of the world would sit in their ships and watch her burn from afar, mourning all the wealth that was destroyed and the fact that they would be making money off this, you know, nation or system or whatever it is. So it's a very, very sobering chapters to read. I encourage people to read the book Revelation. In fact, the Apostle John said that the book Revelation is the only book in the Bible that promises a blessing for those who read it. And, I read it when I was very young, read Hal Lindsey's, you know, Late Great Planet Earth, and I've been interested in Bible prophecy ever since. So I encourage you to read the book of Revelation.
I read some months ago David Wilkerson's book called Set the Trumpet to Thy Mouth, and that book, he believed that America was Mystery Babylon and would be destroyed in 1 hour, and the impression that I got from his interpretation is that it was not towards the end of the tribulation, it was any time.
Wow. That's interesting about David Wilkerson. In fact, the bypass, I grew up in a little town in Oregon, a little fishing town, and my pastor, Mike Hodges, he's just a small town pastor in Southern Oregon, and he eventually left, and then he ended up becoming the national director for Teen Challenge USA under David Wilkerson, and so we stay in touch now on Facebook. And so, recently I got a copy of David Wilkerson's book, The Vision, which he outlines some of the same things. Yeah. And he had a church in New York City where he told his congregation about, you know, that he especially after 9/11, that he believed that in New York City was Babylon and that it would be destroyed in some kind of, you know, probably a nuclear attack. In fact, a couple of years ago when I was interviewing Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, he wrote the New York Times bestseller, The Harbinger to Mystery Shemitah. He said that he was walking by David Wilkerson's church in Times Square, I think sometime after 9/11, heard him actually preaching one of these sermons. And so that was one of the key things that happened that led him to write those books. And then strangely, David Wilkerson died in a car crash a couple years ago in Texas. He fell asleep at the wheel, and everybody was like puzzled by this. I mean, here's this great man of God. This, you know, many people believe he had a very strong prophetic gift, and he dies in this car crash. But then my co-author told me that in the Bible, many of the prophets, that their manner of death was pregnant with meaning. In other words, God would use their manner of death to send a very powerful message. And so Paul McGuire, my co-author, he said that he believed that the manner of David Wilkerson's death, dying in the car crash, falling asleep at the wheel, is indicative of the state of the church today. The church is asleep at the wheel as all these end-time events unfold, and we literally could be on the precipice of the destruction of our nation, and everybody's asleep. It's just it's a very sad situation.
Really interesting. I hadn't actually thought of that, but that's a really good point. And I mean, me personally, David Wilkerson, the cross and the switchblade, that old book, and Nikki Cruz's Run Baby Run. I mean, those were probably the first two books that I read when I got saved, or around about the time I got saved. I can't remember if it was just before or just after. And I don't agree with everything David Wilkerson has said, but by gosh, I've got a lot of respect for that man. You know, he preached righteousness and truth in a pretty fiery sort of manner.
Yeah, he didn't pull any punches. We need more preachers like that today.
Yeah, we do. I totally agree. Because the church does seem, by and large, asleep at the wheel. And even worse in some cases, I think they're actually infiltrated deliberately by these secret societies and, you know, the occult, deliberately leading them down a garden path, you know, which is...
Yeah, you know what? That's an interesting thing you brought up there, is that when I was little, I would read the old Jack Chick comic books. I don't know if you ever read those or not, but he was like this this Christian artist and comic book writer, and he wrote these sort of in-depth comic books that I read when I was young, and they were pretty popular. In fact, I think they say, but plus they turned his comic books into like little tracks, and so there's literally, like, I wrote a story about him a few years ago for Charisma. I think he's probably in his late 80s or early 90s now, but he's still producing these tracks. In fact, I think they say that he's actually the most published author in the world, because there's like 5 billion of his tracks and comics spread all over the world now. And anyways, when I came to Charisma, somebody mysteriously sent me a copy of one of his old comics. It just went, when I got there and I became editor, this package arrived in the mail, and it was one of his old comic books, and it was the one about Mystery Babylon. And so I thumbed through it, and I was, you know, looking through it, and I sort of remembering from when I was a kid when I read this. And in there, it talked about, you know, supposedly that, you know, these secret societies had infiltrated the church, you know, largely beginning, I guess, back in the 50s and 60s. And so I've had, you know, quite an impact on the seminaries and the Bible schools and the church over the years. And then I flew out to do an interview on Jonathan Bernus's Rabbi Jewish Voice with Jonathan Bernus, and when I flew out there, the same day I flew out there, somebody, you know, again sent us one of these old Jack Chick comic books, and it talked about an airplane crash that happened in the very city that I was flying to. So it was, I don't know, some kind of strange, it's just a coincidence, but you know, I've wondered about that, is how infiltrated the church has been by these groups over the years. And in our next book, I plan to, you know, delve into that more deeply, and just who are these secret societies? What is their plan? You know, how powerful are they, and what's happening there?
To get more information out on that, that would be really good. And yeah, the whole film idea that you've got, I think it's a brilliant idea. And yeah, I'm really look forward to seeing it succeed. And it can all seem a bit doomy and gloomy, but we have to remember that as Christians, no matter what, we have hope. We do have hope, and our hope is in Jesus Christ. And the circumstances are not going to dampen that hope in us. And so there are a lot of positive things that we can take out of this.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is the thing, is that, you know, Bible prophecy is actually the great hope of our faith. You know, Jesus promised that he would return someday in the second coming, and that, you know, he would put an end to suffering and death, and that there'd be a new heaven, a new earth, and a new Jerusalem. And so, you know, if we put our faith in Jesus you know, we read the Bible and we go to church, and, you know, try to mature in our faith, you know, we had this great hope. In fact, one of the interviews I did in the book was with Billy Graham. And, you know, he had said that he believed that the signs of the end of the age are converging for the first time since Jesus made those predictions. And he also, he wrote an open letter to America and its deceived people. And he said in that letter that he compared America to ancient Nineveh, which was what he described as the lone superpower of its time. And when God sent the prophet Jonah to Nineveh, the people repented and judgment was averted. And Billy Graham said he believed the same thing can happen today. In fact, my co-author, Paul McGuire, said that he had a vision that occurred to him a few years ago, in which he saw this, like this, he said he was like, he saw himself like up in like 30,000 feet up in the sky, like from a satellite level or something. And he was looking across America, and he saw like this light, like the kind of hue you see, you know, at sunset, beginning on the west coast of America, and then slowly illuminating all these people who are praying, all these believers and Christians who are praying for a country, and then moving across the country, and then eventually spreading throughout the world. And so there's he believes that there's a possibility we could have a great spiritual awakening in the end times as these events unfold and people wake up and become aware of what's happening. Many people are going to turn back to the Lord, and the Bible does talk about in various places about a great spiritual awakening, and ultimately, you know, millions or, you know, hundreds of millions of people that return to God in the end times. And so this is, you know, this is this, you know, if you're listening to this and you know, this is your opportunity to really serve the Lord and get this message out there, because the, you know, what many people believe is the great end times spiritual harvest is probably just over the horizon here. So, you know, I would encourage you, if you're not a Christian, to, you know, to pray to the Lord and ask the Lord to forgive you of your sins and come into your heart. And if you are a Christian or a minister, I encourage you to, you know, to read the Babylon Code or some book, or, you know, familiarize yourself with what's going on in Bible prophecy and tell other people about this. That's the last instruction Jesus gave us, was to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. And now that's more important than ever.
Which brings me to another point I want to emphasize, is that people can't get their relationship with God from someone else. They've got to cultivate it for themselves. You talked about great revival and people in prayer praying for the nation, etc. That's got to be at an individual level, doesn't it? I mean, people need to read the Bible for themselves. They need to study it. They need to be in prayer for themselves. They can't just turn up to church on a Sunday and expect the mother bird to feed them like little chicks with their mouths open. They've got to go, you know, find the food for themselves, don't they, really?
Yeah, that's very true. And in fact, another thing is, you know, the Christians don't do that good of a job anymore of sharing their faith with others. You know, there's all kinds of sort of, you know, societal pressures that discourage that nowadays. But it's more important than ever now that we, you know, we talk to our family and friends and those we know about the Lord and tell them what's happening. And even, you know, share a book with them, share this video, you know, but, you know, most people become believers, you know, through another person. You know, somebody takes the step to share the Lord with them. And that's how it happened. That's how I became a Christian. And many people are that way. So, you know, I would, you know, encourage you to, you know, share your faith with others. That's what Jesus told us to do. And that's the secret to, you know, bringing people to the Lord and this great awakening that many people are hopeful can happen if the church will repent and turn back to God and sincerely, you know, dedicate our lives to serving the Lord.
The platform you've got and the message that you're putting out there through the book and through the upcoming film and just with the interviews you're doing and that, I think it's great. It's exciting. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it unfold and increase over the coming days, weeks, months, and years.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tony, for bringing me on the show. It's an honor and a privilege, and it's amazing. I'm talking to you from Australia, and I'm here in California. That's a amazing thing that the technology has brought us today. And I wish you all the best, and, you know, God bless what you're doing. I know it's not easy, and we greatly appreciate what you're doing too.
Thank you, Troy. New Zealand, not quite Australia, pretty close, but I know many people think New Zealand and Australia are the same, but New Zealanders and Australians don't think so. So, yeah, it's great to have you on the show again today. We've been talking to Troy Anderson on A Minute to Midnight, and we will look forward to having Troy on again with updates in the future.
That sounds great.
So all the best until next time, Troy, and thanks again. Now, people, don't forget to go to aminutetomidnight.com, check out our website, the articles there. We've got some great articles on there, and the website's growing all the time. And also, if you could subscribe to our YouTube channel, you can get our regular broadcasts on YouTube, and we also have audio-only downloads of the shows on our website. Until next time, we'll see you later.